Claims he's still in an emergency holo conference with Rear Admiral Corran.
Demeter had said nothing since Kloss's arrival, but as the Field Marshal opened his mouth to utter another string of invectives, the Space Marine raised his right gauntlet. The motion was slight, yet it caused even the gruff Cadian to pause.
"Captain Spaulding," the Ultramarine said levelly, "can you offer us a professional opinion on the size of the enemy fleet that has just entered real space?"
"Their numbers are still updating," the Navy officer replied hesitantly. "But the system's auger station and the fleet's sensorium arrays have confirmed at least 5 capital ships, with between 3 and 5 more currently being assessed. Escort numbers remain unverified, but it is undoubtedly a major incursion. The subsector battle fleet elements anchored in high orbit are probably outnumbered a little over 2 to 1.
"It can only be the fleet of Warlord Ur-Gork himself, then," Demeter said. "He has brought the forefront of the war to this system."
"As I feared," Kloss said. "I warned von Klimt about this. 2 weeks ago, the Greenskin offensive in the Arden system stalls. 2 weeks ago, we retake Priscilla and secure the Ior salient. Why? Because they've shifted their center of power. They've moved their focus, their strength of mass, to here, to this system. 2 weeks is a short warp jump from Arden. 2 weeks, and they redeploy their primary elements here and crush us, turning the flank on the whole subsector defense. Sometimes I think those damned Xenos could teach our High Command a thing or two."
Custer growled, a gauntlet on the haft of his mag-locked Crozius.
"Careful, Field Marshal."
To his credit, even Kloss appeared to immediately regret his words, blanching at the black-armored Space Marine's ire.
"If Ur-Gork's fleet is approaching, our own in-system elements will be overwhelmed," Demeter went on.
From anyone else around the chart, it would have sounded like defeatism. From the Primaris, it came across merely as carefully considered fact. He continued.
"An evacuation would also be impossible before they reach orbit."
"So we engage the bastards," Kloss said, recovering his brashness. "At the very least, we can give the neighboring systems time to readjust, maybe even dispatch reinforcements. We can sell our lives dearly here."
"I suspect that will be our fate, Field Marshal," Demeter agreed. "But it is pointless to sacrifice that which can be saved. I recommend the subsector battle fleet conducts a fighting retreat to the edge of the system, to either hold there for reinforcements or complete a warp jump withdrawal."
"You want to yield orbit to the Xenos?" Kloss said incredulously. "That would give them immediate planet-wide air superiority. They'd fill the skies with their scrap bombers and launch orbital strikes with impunity."
"That is the situation we will find ourselves in when our own fleet elements are destroyed," Demeter pointed out. "How long do you believe Rear Admiral Corran can hold out for? A Terran day, at the most? The sacrifice of significant elements of the Imperial Navy would provide us with almost no tangible advantage."
Kloss said nothing, eyes fixed on the holochart, as he digested the Ultramarine's words. Demeter continued.
"I will be transmitting instructions for a fighting withdrawal to my own flagship within the next 30 minutes. The shipmaster will recommend the same course of action to the Rear Admiral."
"I doubt von Klimt will suggest anything similar to Corran," Kloss said. "The fool will probably want him to attack head-on."
"Then he will find himself without the support of the Spear of Macragge," Demeter replied.
"Lords," said Spaulding tentatively, gesturing at the holochart.
A new sigil had blinked into life on the display, an orc glyph, larger than the others clustered around it.
"What is it? Ur-Gork's flagship?"
Kloss demanded, peering at the data readouts accompanying the marker designate.
"No," said Spaulding. "It's worse. Much worse."
Xerxes. Shipmaster Xerxes broke the voxlink and sat back in his command throne. Beneath him, the bridge of the Spear of Macragge lay in silence, the faces of 100 deck officers turned up towards him in expectation. The Spartan work surfaces, cogitator banks and vox relays, gleamed in the light cast by the lumen strips and picked screen stands. Even the servitors, ranking the gantries that ringed the command dais, had gone into standby, awaiting the fresh bursts of coding cant that would give them purpose. Xerxes gestured towards the auger banks and spoke.
"Diagnosticator, bring me the latest sensorium readout from Quadrant 9, Sector 13. Remove all incomplete variables prior to transference."
The order was not the one the bridge serfs had expected. The Spear of Macragge's auger staff hurried to obey, filtering the data and transmitting it directly to the shipmaster. Xerxes swiped and enhanced the slates built into the arms of his command throne, his gen-hanced mind analyzing it all in just a few heartbeats. The auger returns didn't lie. Xerxes saw his fears confirmed in the first grainy picked scans of the target area. There was a behemoth at the heart of the Orc fleet that had just torn itself from the warp and was now approaching the system's core at full steam ahead, plasma drives blazing. Going by the designates Imperial Strategos attempted, often in vain, to apply to the ramshackle alien void vessels, it was a battleship, longer and bulkier than even an Emperor-class capital vessel of the Imperial Navy. That was not what gave Xerxes pause, however. It was the thing attached to the Orc craft.
"Heavy customization," he murmured to himself. "Extra armor bulk and engine housing. It's a transport."
He trailed off. The scans showed that it was coupled to what appeared to be a large sphere of void-borne rock, a meteorite of fused and scarred stone. Its craggy surface was studded with more Orc structures and plasma drives of its own, which blazed in sympathy with those of its carrier. A great skull glyph in its underside seemed to glare at Xerxes through the grainy images he swiped through, full of alien malice.
Rock,
Xerxes said. It was a method of planetary invasion so crude and so mindlessly brutal that only the Greenskins could possibly have conceived of it. An asteroid or meteorite would be seized by an Orc fleet and mined, installed with plasma drives that would enable the aliens to steer it to their own course. Thus directed, it would be flung at a target world, crash-landing with enough force to annihilate any planetary defences. Those Greenskins within that survived the impact would then disgorge and slaughter the stunned defenders. The rock's only weakness was the fact that they rarely, if ever, were capable of warp travel. They could be detected far out on the fringes of a system, engaged and neutralized. They possessed no warp drives. This one, however, did. The battleship had acted as its carrier. It would deliver it directly to Ikara. Of that, Xerxes had no doubt. The soft voice of the Spear of Macragge's signals officer disturbed Xerxes's thoughts.
"Rear Admiral Corrin is awaiting a connection, Lord."
"Put him on the throne vox," Xerxes ordered, activating his personal earpiece. The static, chopped voice of the Navy Admiral crackled in his ear.
"Word from downstairs, shipmaster," he said. "Lord Commander von Klimt has given my fleet discretion to engage or withdraw as I see fit."
"My company commander has ordered me to mount a fighting retreat to the system's edge," Xerxes replied. "If we attempt to hold this anchorage, we will likely be surrounded and destroyed in detail."
"Agreed," Corrin said.
"I sense a degree of reluctance, Rear Admiral," Xerxes said.
"Leaving one of the God Emperor's worlds undefended before a ramshackle conglomerate of Xenos scum doesn't sit well,"
Corrin admitted.
"I agree. Perhaps a compromise. From their current speed, I don't believe the main body of the Xenos fleet will be able to overtake us. We should be able to engage their vanguard and still withdraw without becoming committed to a full fleet action. And while we're at it, perhaps we might attempt to strike a blow at that monstrous payload they have bound for Ikara."
"Agreed," Corrin said. "If you wish to take the lead, the Pride of Makaroth and Lance of Vengeance will support you."
"'We have been given discretion to conduct a fighting withdrawal,' Xerxes said. "'So let's fight, Rear Admiral.'
"'Good hunting, Ultramarine!'
The connection ended. Xerxes looked out across the bridge once more, taking in the expectant silence before issuing the order.
"'All hands! Clear for action!'
Urgork. Morcopolips was ready. Urgork bashed his skin-in blades together, the huge, wickedly serrated weapons clanging out over the bridge of the Worldhammer. Slyboy, the orc war boss's blind seer, cringed back from his master's exuberance.
"Here we go, Sly, ya git!"
Urgork bellowed, grinning from tusk to tusk. He thumped one of his great blades into the decomposing squig corpse sagging beside his trophy-laden chair, and snatched the orc psyker by the throat with his now free hand, hauling the runty greenskin close.
You better have got this one right,
he snarled, gristle-flecked spit splattering the weird boy. The smaller orc squirmed and choked, nodding vigorously in the warlord's grasp.
Tell me!
Urgork trailed off into incoherent stammers, tusks grinding together. His body seemed to freeze up, a twitch tugging at his scarred face, one eye rolling back into its socket while the other dilated. Slyboy's legs beat the air in panic as the warboss's grip continued to tighten, slowly choking him.
Grok!
Urgork managed to growl from between his locked jaws, foam building around his maw. A greenskin scurried up the ladder to the boss chair dais, a hunchbacked, wheezing creature clad in a greasy white smock, black leather glove gauntlets, and grimy goggles. He fumbled with a dirt-encrusted syringe as the warlord started to spasm violently, shaking the near-unconscious Slyboy back and forth like a rag doll. The bent-over pain boy, syringe finally readied, lunged forwards with a yelp and stabbed it into the meat of the warboss's thigh, using both hands to inject a huge load of viscous-looking yellow liquid. Urgork's head snapped back. He let out a shuddering gasp as both eyes refocused. His hand unclenched, and Slyboy clanged to the deck, choking and retching. Grok yanked the syringe out and backed away, twitching nervously. The warboss lowered his head again, slowly flexing his neck and shoulders. Bones crunched and popped. The savage seizure that had gripped him was gone. He nodded to Grok.
My thanks, Doc.
Slyboy had used the few seconds' respite to attempt to crawl away, feeling his way blindly through the detritus littering the command deck. Urgork grunted and snatched him by the scruff of the neck.
"'Tell me again, Sly,' he growled. "'Tell me of division.'
"'It's all down there, boss,'
the pitiful orc mewled.
"'All the hard boys in their big ruined city.'
"'And the one in white, too?'
"'Yeah, boss, course.'
"'And you got Big Mech Cog Crusher the proper coordinates,'
Urgork demanded.
"'Yeah, boss, I swears.'
Urgork grunted again and released the weird boy.
"'Then it's time,'
he said, yanking his second skinning blade from the squig corpse.
"'Grok, stand close,'
he barked. When the hunched pain boy was crouched next to his boss's chair, he slammed the hilt of one of his blades into a huge red button that was wired crudely into the arm of the seat. Nothing happened. Urgork sighed and hit it again. There was a violent lurch and a scream of rusting gears as juddering motion seized the chair. It began to descend, disconnecting from the circular dais around it, sinking down into the deck with an unhealthy rattle. Urgork's grin returned as he was carried down, down from his flagship, through its refuse-clogged holds, and then on into Morcopolips. The great hollowed-out meteorite was packed full of the boys, its multiple decks resounding with the chanting of individual mobs and warbands as they worked themselves into a battle frenzy. The platform on which the boss chair sat passed each open level one by one. As it went by,
Urgork bellowed and slammed his long knives together. Each passing deck roared back its approval, driven into a mania by the presence of their war boss. He watched as an orc knocked down another in one of the mobs, a fight breaking out instantly as individual boys vented their mounting battle frenzy in the only way they knew how. This was gonna be a right proper scrap when it all kicked off. Finally, the platform clattered to a stop, the crudely modified grav lift levered into the control room at the rock's heart. Stapskar and his chief knob, Grimtooth, were waiting for Urgork, in among Big Mech Cogcrusher and his tinkerers. Urgork gestured to the commando boss with one claw. Stapskar forced his way to the chair's side and bowed low, his soiled camo cape draping the mesh decking plates.
"You and your boys know your job, Stabber," the warlord demanded.
"Course, boss. We won't let you down again."
"Then let's go,"
Urgork bellowed, slamming the pommels of both knives into the flanks of his chair.
"What we waiting for?" "Orbital entry,"
Cogcrusher said, after a moment's silence, the big mech's voice like the rattle of rusty gears. Urgork glowered.
"Fine,"
he grunted.
"Won't be long now, boss,"
Cogcrusher clattered, bionic optics clicking as they focused on the control room's plethora of cracked, mismatched viewscreens.
"The Humi ships is coming for a scrap."
Polixis. The evening sky above Ikara 9 was riven by fire as new stars burst into brief, furious life overhead. Most of those on the planet's surface saw little but indistinct flares amidst the grey smog that blanketed the polluted atmosphere, but the wind that sometimes knifed down from the tombstones was blowing a gale as night fell, affording Polixis a view of the full fury of an orbital engagement playing out. He watched the silent flashes and flares light up the dark from the steps of the Basilica of St. Albarak, the smelter. Demeter and Castor were still inside. The feverish activity of the headquarters had entered overdrive, with an immediate planet-wide stand-to being issued. Orders coming out of Croton seemed to be rudderless, sometimes contradictory. Demeter had passed on word that Shipmaster Xerxes and Rear Admiral Corrin were going to engage the vanguard of the Xenos fleet before withdrawing, an act that Demeter had left to Xerxes's discretion. With nothing to contribute to the command and control of the developing situation, Polixis had taken his leave. The Basilica Square lay before him, quiet and wrapped in nighttime shadows. The broken remains of a Chimera armored personnel carrier sat where it had been gutted by an Orc rocket earlier in the day. Alien bodies had been heaped in one far corner and burned by flamer-armed purification teams, their stinking, charred remains now smoldering in the dark. Much of the rest of the square had been taken up by mortuary orderlies, who had laid out row after row of dead Imperial guardsmen, clad in the black plastic wraps of Munitorum-issue body bags. Bar a few off-duty troopers, smoking lows and talking quietly near the foot of the steps, and an ecclesiarchy preacher moving along the dead ranks, sprinkling blessed salve, the square was empty. Polixis briefly pondered the curious similarities between the dead below and Ovido's body, lying in the crypt beneath him. The sheer scale of the Astra Militarum's losses made it tempting to think of their deaths as more impersonal, almost meaningless. But in truth, Polixis knew the difference between the fallen was more slender than it seemed. All had fallen in the cause of mankind. All had received a blessing over their remains. All would live on in the memories of their battle brothers. As far as Polixis was concerned, the sacrifice was one and the same. He turned his eyes once more to the distant, deadly beauty of the unfolding high-orbit engagement, his mind continuing to wander. The litanies he had memorized as an initiate spoke so often of the importance of legacy and heritage, of how, through his gene seed, an Adeptus Astartes could live forever. Once he had doubted such claims, no conscious memory remained, all else was mere metaphor. Future battle brothers learned the names of those who had gone before, and their many deeds, and perhaps their breasts swelled with pride, knowing they bore a part of them inside. but it was all so much history. But such doubts had only plagued Polixus when he had still been young, still grappling with his new existence. He knew better now. Individuality meant nothing.
The purpose of us all is to fight and to sacrifice ourselves when we can fight no more, Polixus murmured to himself as he watched the sky, letting the induction litany of the apothecarian ease his thoughts. To pass on our own gene seed so that another can serve the chapter when we no longer can.
There was perhaps extra poignancy in the fact that Ovido had been Mars-born, among the first of his kind. A little over half of the Fulminata were the same. They had come to Ultramar, to McCrag, and painted their Mark 10 power armor the blue of the Ultramarines. They had learned the chapter's doctrines by rote, fought and bled and died beside their new brothers, but they had not been from Ultramar, nor even from the 500 worlds. They were the first of their kind, the first Primaris, forged on a distant red planet by a being far beyond the understanding of any of them. Polixus was not Mars-born. He was from the realm of Ultramar, a son of the Agri-world of Ajax, the first Primaris Ultramarine to be recruited from the worlds the chapter called home. One of the first, he corrected himself, silently, as his blood brother came out onto the basilica's steps to join him. Polixus nodded. Castor said nothing, looking to the sky. The occasional silent flash of a macro-cannon broadside, or the blink beam of a lance-strike reflected from the glossy black sheen of his power armor. Neither of them spoke. A memory intruded as Polixus watched his brother. He remembered looking up at the spread of stars, lying on his back, limbs aching from a long day's toil. The night air had been warm and quiet and full of the sweet musk of the harvest cycle. The medicate in him explained the sudden recollection easily enough. It was nothing more than the firing of brain synapses, a shadow in an abandoned room that vanished with the coming of light. Such flashes were not unheard of among the first generation of Primaris born within the realm of Ultramar. Polixus understood better than most that, for all their prowess as warriors, the creation of new Primaris was not a perfect process. Castor could sometimes summon up what appeared to be perfectly clear memories of their shared childhood. For Polixus, it was far harder. His past was relegated to these half-moments, so slender and so fine that they felt unreal. His training as an apothecary helped him rationalize them as a simple, minor failing in his induction process. Once, perhaps, he had reclined in the agri-fields of Ajax, maybe close to the collective that he called home, with his brother at his side, watching the night sky. It didn't matter. He told himself that whenever the shadow memories stirred. Those agri-fields were long gone now, and that starry sky had been ripped in half by the stuff of nightmares. "What news, brother?" he asked Castor, deliberately breaking the contemplative stillness.
"From orbit," Castor replied, eyes still on the starry vault. "Xerxes has engaged. He is attempting to target the rock, but the Xenos have it well shielded. He will be forced to withdraw within the hour." "And from High Command?" "Von Klimt is demanding reinforcements for Croton. He expects that to be the rock's target. Gloss has agreed to send his reserve. 2 corps. They're mobilizing as we speak." "This will be bloody," Polixus said, eyes on the guardsmen in the square below. "It is a blessing," Castor replied, his voice low but tinged with relish. When Polixus said nothing, he went on. "The Xenos' supreme warlord will be among their fleet. He has come here to fight. Of that there can be no doubt. He presents us with an opportunity. Slay him, and his dominion over the green-skinned tribes he commands will end. They will fragment, as they always do, and this war will turn at a stroke. Kill warlord Urgork, and the subsector will be cleansed before the year is out."
"You are fortunate, my little brother, to always be able to find a bloodthirsty positive among our dire circumstances. Were a whole company at our side, I may share your optimism. We have here only half strength, and we have suffered losses.
The captain knows how to use what he has, Castor said, his voice full of certainty. Once the Xenos leader commits himself, we shall strike.
It is already decided, then?
It is. Word is being passed to Lieutenant Samson and Tyrannus. We are preparing to move with the Dawn. Croton is presumably their target, so we will go there, too.
Has the captain told Field Marshal Kloss?
He is doing so now. I doubt there will be many objections. The Field Marshal is brash for a human. His ire is focused on his commanding general, and the fact that he is expected to send his reserves to support him.
He will need them here, I imagine, Polixis said. As soon as the warbands across the river realize their fleet has seized orbit, they will attempt a counterattack.
It is only a shame that we will not still be here to greet them, Castor growled.
You seemed eager to purge today, brother, he said, smiling knowingly. Even now, after so long, seeing his younger brother roused to ire brought him a mixture of amusement and something akin to awe.
The Xenos here are weak, Castor said, without any hint of levity, and Polixis could sense the fire that forever smoldered in his brother stirring once more. Even by the oafish standards of their degenerate race, we can see why now. This was only a second front for them. Well, now it has become their primary focus. When the Xenos warlord comes, he will bring his best with him.
A challenge, if nothing else, Polixis said heavily.
As the Emperor wills.
Polixis nodded but said nothing more, as overhead a great flash lit up the sky, illuminating everything beneath for a few seconds, like the birth of a second sun. Somewhere high above, the apothecary knew an entire ship had just died. Xerxes. To a casual observer, the quiet that had reigned over the bridge of the Spear of Macragge had been totally subsumed. The multi-tiered command decks rang with the clatter of proximity alarms and incoming munitions warnings. The communications pits were filled with the hissing, crackling urgency of dozens of vox messages, and cogitators chimed and pinged with reports from weapons systems, the Engenarium, the shield generators, and the astrocartography bay. Blue-uniformed runners and rating officers hurried from workstation to workstation, or up the flights of narrow spiral stairs to the upper tiers, polished boots ringing off the mesh rungs and decking plates. Xerxes reigned over it all from his command throne, like a graven colossus in the midst of a bustling town square, immovable, largely silent, his occasional commands issued in clear, measured tones. The bridge of a ship of war as large and as powerful as the Spear of Macragge was never a truly calm place during a full void engagement. The scenes unfolding around the shipmaster were a prime example of a well-drilled and highly dedicated command crew carrying out the tasks they had all performed many times previously. The engagement with the Xenos vanguard seemed to be going well, and the Ultramarine's warship was running at optimum efficiency. But it did not take all of Xerxes's experience to be able to see that unfolding events presaged disaster. His eyes narrowed as he watched the data displays, already anticipating the turning of the tide. The Imperial Navy Avenger-class Grand Cruiser Lance of Vengeance was out of position. It had taken up station starboard of the Spear of Macragge, and it had closed relentlessly with the oncoming vanguard of the Xenos fleet. Rear Admiral Corrin, in tandem with Xerxes, had changed the course of his flagship, the Pride of Makaroth, to engage the Orc escorts from range. Too close, and the trio of Imperial capital ships ran the risk of becoming entangled with the main Xenos fleet bearing down on them. And nor did Xerxes want to risk an Orc boarding action when his battle barge was bereft of its complement of Adeptus Astartes and had only half of its Thunderhawks and none of the Overlords on station. Keeping the Orcs at distance for as long as possible also slowed their arrival to the anchorage point above the city of Croton, the expected target of the alien flagship and its rock payload.
"You've drifted," Xerxes said to himself. He didn't have a vox link established with the Lance of Vengeance's commander,
and he already knew that transmitting anything now would be in vain. Without stasis anchor, or a new heading, the Lance of Vengeance was turning on its port broadside, close to the Orc fleet. Xerxes knew that its captain, Marrow, had a record of high-risk manoeuvres and close encounters, a past that explained his position in charge of an aged, largely outdated grand cruiser like the Lance. Marrow had already complained that the short-range batteries of the Avenger would be completely wasted if unleashed from distance. Xerxes tapped into the vox traffic between Marrow and Admiral Corran, expression grim as the scale of the approaching disaster became more apparent.
"I will have you before the Admiralty Board if you don't disengage immediately, Marrow," Corran shouted.
Marrow's response was a sound of weak affirmation. Xerxes had heard that sort of noise enough times before during void combat, where a man's fate was sealed long minutes before death's slow reach caught up with him. He already knew it was too late. A trio of green-skin escorts, little more than brute conglomerations of welded-together scrap, were triggering their hyperthrust, burning out their oversized plasma drives in violent bursts of sudden speed. Xerxes could only watch the holo chart, mapping out the movement of the ships around the Spear of Macragge, as the outmaneuvered grand cruisers struggled to turn, Marrow caught in panic between the desire to finish bringing his port batteries to bear and the sudden need to escape. Whichever he chose, his fate was sealed. A point-blank storm of fire from the Lance of Vengeance ripped apart one of the oncoming escorts, dwarfed by the grand cruiser's bulk, but the other two made it through. They rammed themselves directly into the Imperial ship's flank. The Spear of Macragge's prow-picked casters caught the collision, and Xerxes watched with a dark expression as the first alien warship slammed home. They had been built with just such insanely brutal tactics in mind. Both were wedges of reinforced detritus, created to shield the larger orc ships from incoming fire, and when the time was right, plough indiscriminately into enemy vessels. Xerxes saw bulkheads and the Lance's macro-cannon batteries buckling in slow motion, a ripple of tearing adamantium rupturing the hull and collapsing deck after deck. He knew he was watching the deaths of thousands. He had experienced the same numerous times during void combat, but the remoteness, the silence, and the almost languid slowness of the collapsing capital ship still rendered it all deeply disconcerting. Then the second orc escort hit, this time towards the Lancer's aft, and the grim spectacle reached a crescendo. The impact of the alien vessel against the reinforced plating beneath the Grand Cruiser's bridge tower deflected it, slamming it into the side of the Engenarium block. The plasma drives buckled, then detonated. The blast travelled in a wave of broiling blue flame along the length of the Lance, consuming both it and the battered remains of its killers. As the sunburst flash of total annihilation lit the void, the Spear of Macragge's auger systems overloaded, the picked feeds shorting out before blinking back online. The Lance of Vengeance was gone. All that remained was a scattering of debris, flickering with fires that died out in the vacuum of space.
"Gunner, maintain your rate of fire," Xerxes ordered, then switched to the communications pits.
"Get me a link to the Pride of Makaroth."
"Shipmaster Xerxes,"
came Corran's voice over the vox. He sounded strained.
"I believe the time to withdraw has come, Rear Admiral," Xerxes said.
When his words were met with silence, he carried on.
"We have already suffered a blow here for little gain. We must not compound Captain Marrow's mistake."
"You're correct,"
Corran replied, though Xerxes could sense the rage that burned in every word, the desire to avenge the loss of the Lance of Vengeance by throwing the entirety of the battle fleet against the oncoming greenskins.
"I will issue orders for an immediate disengagement."
"The Spear of Macragge will hold station until you have set a course," Xerxes offered, knowing the Admiral's ponderous flagship would need some time to come about.
"My thanks, Ultramarine,"
Corran responded. The link went dead.
"Shipmaster, the Xenos are changing formation," one of the auger attendants called up from the sensorium banks.
Xerxes turned his gaze from the Pride of Makaroth's representation on the holochart back to the alien fleet. The auger analysis was correct. The sigils were shifting across the display. Until that moment, the alien fleet had remained clustered around its flagship, denying the Imperial long-range bombardment the opportunity to target the Warlord's vessel. Now, however, they were spreading away from it, their cumbersome drives adopting new headings that carried them wide across Ikara's orbit. For a moment, Xerxes thought they were trying to outflank and envelop the Imperial ships before they could pull away. Then the icons that represented the alien fleet blinked. Another had been added by the auger arrays, adjacent to Urgork's flagship, but pulling away rapidly. Xerxes realized what he was looking at. The flagship had released the rock. Moreover, it had done so early, long before it was positioned in an orbital arc above the capital city of Croton.
"Link to Captain Demeter immediately," he ordered the Vox Seneschal. "Signal to the surface. The sky is about to fall."
Polixis. Polixis saw it first as a twinkling amidst the fiery sky. It grew rapidly, a star burning white as it fell from the war-wracked firmament, a herald of annihilation. The Vox network burst into frantic chatter, garbled orders, reports and requests for clarification flooding the channels. All eyes in the Basilica Square stared heavenwards as the light grew to a furious intensity.
"May the Emperor and the Primarch be with us all," Castor murmured when he caught sight of the white blaze.
The scream of the plummeting rock filled the air, a roar of bone-shuddering intensity vibrating through every brick and girder in Shabbat. Polixis could do nothing but watch as the light filled the sky, the whole world, its rage like the primordial awakening of a new god. It howled overhead, framed by the basilica's spires, eclipsing the city's ruinous skyline. The strength of its passing threw the guardsmen across the square down to the rubble-littered flagstones. It almost shook even the space marines from their feet. The rock struck. It hit south of the basilica, amongst the remains of the slums near the eastern bank of Gorgon. The impact sounded like the death knell of the whole world, coupled with a flash of light even more brilliant than the destruction of the capital ship in orbit above. Polixis saw the skyline of the city to the south, caught like a snap-picked in a moment of perfect clarity, backlit by the fire of the collision. He braced himself. As the report of the meteorite's impact echoed through Shabbat, the shockwave struck. The buildings on the south side of the square, already reduced to bullet-scarred walls and mounds of rubble, crumbled. The blast slammed debris into the square, throwing up the corpses lying there alongside those still living. Both Castor and Polixis were picked up and flung, despite the efforts of their power armor servos and stabilizers, directly back into the wall of the basilica. Polixis grunted, his genhanced body stopping the blow from stunning him or driving the wind from his lungs, even as he felt a section of his armor's backpack unit crumple. He fell to his knees alongside Castor as the wave passed on, the sounds of the rock's impact still ringing in his skull, his lyman's ear failing to cancel out the thunderous noise. The Basilica of St. Albarac, the smelter, still stood. Its foundations had been laid deeper and stronger than any other building in Shabbat Alpha, and though its crypts quaked and stones were shaken from its belfry, the walls remained intact. Polixis regained his feet. The scene of destruction that would undoubtedly have played out before him was lost, completely obscured by the dust cloud that had accompanied the blast wave. Even with his auto-sensors stripping out the haze and boosting what little light there was, he could barely make out the bottom of the basilica's entrance steps. The Vox had also gone silent, the landlines to the main communications hub broken, the impact and the dust distorting the remote channels. For a moment, Polixis felt he and Castor were the only beings left on Ikara, perhaps the only two left in the whole of existence. There was nothing, nothing but the swirling of the dust and the low hiss of the Vox, a dreadful, languid peace left in the wake of the terrific destruction. It was the quiet of near total extinction.
"The rock!"
Custer said, jolting his brother from the surreal reverie he'd slipped into.
How far to the south do you think it came down?
Within the city limits, Polixis said, starting to move down the steps.
Where are you going?
Custer demanded.
I'm needed elsewhere, the apothecary replied, pausing and looking back up at him.
See to the captain, brother. He will need you now more than ever.
Go carefully, Custer warned. The Xenos are upon us.
Polixis forced himself not to respond to the obviousness of his blood brother's instructions. He knew that he tried to advise Custer just as frequently. The difference between them was that the chaplain would, more than likely, snap something back at him, whereas Polixis usually managed to hold his tongue and accept the advice. Somehow, he knew this had always been the case. Polixis ran across the square. The autosensors, shared by the Primaris, were still online, still connected. His diagnoster was reading half a dozen injuries, all from squads along the southern edge of Shabbat. Scroll data indicated damage caused by collapsing buildings. Shadows loomed at him from out of the impenetrable dust, limping and stumbling. Anyone in the city not blessed with the genhancements of the Adeptus Astartes had undoubtedly been left stunned by the rock's landing, ears deafened, and movements sluggish. The sky itself had come down, and death had followed. Polixis did not stop to assist them. There was worse coming. He knew that thousands of greenskins would be disgorging from the rock, flooding its crater and storming the flattened streets around it. What was worse, they had come down on the Imperial side of the Gorgon, effectively outflanking the gains made by the Guard and the Primaris the day before. With a single great blow, the Greenskins had all but reclaimed Shabbat Alpha. The apothecary carried on into the rubble beyond what had once been the edge of the square. There were no more streets to follow, only an undulating wasteland of wreckage, spars and twisted girders jutting through mounds of broken masonry. The thousands of hablocks, refineries and manufactoria south of the basilica reduced to complete ruination. The dust still hung heavy in the night air, so that he had only his armor's inbuilt compass and a blinking burst map to navigate by. It was slow, hard going. He came across more survivors as he went, mostly rear echelon guard units.
"Help us, my lord,"
one man pleaded, stumbling from the darkness, cradling a broken arm. Others bore injured comrades, crying out for the Space Marine's aid or for orders amidst the confusion. He stopped for none. He had no instructions for them, and no time to help them tend injured friends or dig others out from under the collapsed ruins. If he did pause, more would die when the orcs struck. After a while, his vox bead crackled back to life. Demeter had managed to re-establish the link to the rest of the Demi-Company, and his instructions went out to all squads, his voice as calm and level as ever.
"Field Marshal Kloss has ordered a complete withdrawal from Shabbat. We will be facilitating that retreat. The dust cloud from the rock is still too thick to risk a full aerial extraction, so it will be on foot. All squads are to hold their current positions for 30 minutes, so that the guard can conduct a staggered, overlapping move eastwards, towards the ash wastes. There, they will seek to establish a new front line. All units confirm."
Polixis Blink acknowledged the fresh orders as he went. Even disregarding the fact that there were now thousands of greenskins on the eastern bank of the river, the devastation wreaked by the rock's impact had shattered Imperial command and control. Units were scattered, dazed and struggling to deal with thousands of casualties from the collapsed buildings. Some were cut off, others had simply vanished, buried by the sudden violent tremors that had shaken apart most of the city. From the reports trickling in on the other frequencies, it seemed as if the main combat forces stationed along the newly taken line of the Gorgon's east bank were largely intact, but spotters were reporting increased activity from across the polluted river, including what looked like crude barges and rafts. The Xenos on the western bank had clearly been preparing to cross en masse for some time, and now that reinforcements had arrived, they were seizing the opportunity. Combined with the assault expected from the rock itself, There was no practical means for the guard to resist for long, even with the Primaris at their side. Polixis paused to check his visor display beside a street lumen whose wrought iron post had somehow survived the demolition of everything around it. The nearest squad, Clastis, was a mile to the west, overlooking a stretch of the river docks. They weren't reporting any casualties. The second nearest, Squad Domitian, was. According to the Vox, brothers Ennio and Trejo had been buried by the roof of a collapsing manufactorum, and the rest of Domitian were still working to extract them. They were the most southern of the Primaris squads. When the greenskins from the Rock first encountered Imperial forces, it would be Domitian's hellblasters.
"I am approaching from the northeast. Watch your targeting matrices," Polixis said over the Vox.
A few minutes later, he discerned shapes in the gloom ahead, the familiar bulk of Mark X power armor.
"Well met, Brother Apothecary,"
Sergeant Domitian called out as he approached. Like everyone else, the Ultramarine's proud blue armor was now a uniform gray, caked in the dust that had shrouded Shabbat. Four of Domitian's hellblasters, Brothers Gratian, Junarius, Lorenz, and Luco, were standing watch over the rubble that had once been a manufactorum side row, while three more, Marius, Otho, and Victus, worked to haul debris away from one of the numerous mounds that had formed where one of the refinery city's workhouses had once stood.
"Ennio and Trejo were still inside when the shockwave hit," Domitian said, "as were Gratian and Luco, but they were able to work themselves free."
"You have contact with them both over the Vox?" Polixis asked.
"Yes, I'll patch you through."
"Brother Apothecary,"
crackled Ennio's voice over the link. He sounded calm and unhurried, apparently untroubled by the fact that he was buried beneath tons of rubble.
"Can you describe your injuries to me, brother?" Polixis asked, assessing the remote Vitae readout as he spoke.
"Left arm shattered,"
Ennio said tersely.
"It is unresponsive."
"Both legs,"
Trejo added, the pain audible in his voice.
"You should leave me, brothers. I will only be an encumbrance."
"Cease such foolish chatter," Polixis ordered, checking the rubble underfoot.
The armor of the two Primaris had clearly taken the worst of the collapse. Any unaugmented human would have been immediately crushed by the building's fall.
"We shall have you up soon, brothers," he added.
"We are to withdraw when they are recovered," Domitian said.
"So it seems. The guard are retreating eastwards."
Domitian didn't answer. After a pause, Polixis realized why. His genhanced hearing, further magnified by his power armor, had detected noises in the darkness, out beyond the small perimeter established by the squad. Bestial bellows and roars, and the pounding of iron-shod boots.
"Xenos,"
Domitian said.
"From the south,"
Brother Gratian added, plasma incinerator raised.
"We must hurry,"
Polixis said, unclamping his absolver bolt pistol.
"Prime incinerators,"
Domitian ordered, the words followed by a low whine and the blue glow of charged plasma, suffusing the dust-choked night. Otho, Marius, and Victus had redoubled their efforts to drag aside the rubble, working down towards the locator tags triggered by Ennio and Trejo.
"Are there no guard units nearby?"
Polixis asked, as the raucous sound of the approaching mob grew louder.
"None that survived,"
Domitian said, facing south into the night.
"We rescued about a dozen men, all injured. They're on their way to the rear."
There was a thudding burst of bolter fire, muffled and distorted by the dust. Polixis half-turned, checking the designator on his display. The squads further along the Gorgon, including the nearest, Clastis, had begun to engage the greenskins that were attempting to cross the river. Any hope of support was rapidly evaporating.
"Fire at will,"
Domitian ordered. The bellowing from the darkness had reached fever pitch, seeming to resound from all quarters, filling the night with the chilling promise of bloodshed. Polixis felt his twin hearts rising to the tempo of the approaching battle, and realized a snarl of adrenaline-fueled anticipation was splitting his lips.
In that moment, he understood once again where Castor's burning passion for the thunder of war came from. A shout went up from Victus. Polixis saw he was dragging battered, grime-encrusted plate armor from the rubble at his feet. The Tabrin campaign markings were visible around the gorget. It was Ennio. Polixis started towards him. At the same time, hunchback shapes came lumbering from the dust-swathed night, their roars filling the darkness.
"Open fire!" roared Domitian.
Chapter 3. Evacuation. Demeter. Captain Demeter and Ancient Skyrus were joined by Chaplain Castor as they departed from the Basilica. Field Marshal Kloss and his staff were packing away equipment they had set up mere hours before, burning what couldn't be taken in promethium drums in the remains of the square outside. Preparing to evacuate, one of the Marshal's aides had recommended blowing the munitions stockpiled just that evening in the crypts beneath the Basilica, but Kloss had denied the request, mindful of the propaganda defeat that would be inflicted on Imperial forces if they were seen to demolish one of the only buildings still standing in Shabbat, and an ancient place of worship at that. Demeter had done what he could to assist the Imperial Guard's withdrawal. Amidst the disastrous fallout, the captain had noted that a small piece of good fortune could yet prove decisive. Adhering to the orders to reinforce the capital of Croton in expectation of the rocks landing there, two of Kloss's eight corps had already been on the move and were largely clear of Shabbat when the meteor had struck. They were now busy preparing a new defensive line on the edge of the ash wastes to Shabbat's east, just beyond the remains of the slum outskirts. If Kloss could extract even a few more corps, Demeter believed there would be sufficient numbers to pin the greenskins in the city until further reinforcements could be brought up. Saving just a few divisions, however, looked like it would be a tall enough order, let alone several corps. Communications were still choppy, and the wasteland the city had been reduced to was combining with the night and the dust to confound attempts at an orderly withdrawal. What was worse, the Xenos were now attacking along the length of the Gorgon in concert with those pouring from the rock. All contact with the southernmost guard brigades had long been lost, and Demeter began receiving reports from his southernmost Primaris, Squad Domitian, that they were coming under sustained assault. All along the line, the Primaris were holding on while they could, giving the Astra Militarum the precious minutes they needed to disengage. Demeter's gut told him they'd need more time.
"Bring up Extremis," he ordered Tech Marine Tiberon over the Vox, "and Squad Tiro. We are taking the fight to the Xenos."
"We are to counterattack,"
Castor asked as they passed down the Basilica steps and into the square beyond.
"The Xenos must be focused," Demeter said. "They will be drawn to the area of most resistance. I will provide that resistance."
"The rest of the Demi Company,"
Castor began.
"Lieutenant Tyrannus will take command," Demeter said. "His orders are to continue the extraction and support the Astra Militarum for as long as possible."
"Allow me to accompany you, Captain," Castor said.
"Together we shall stem the tide of alien filth long enough to bring righteous fire back to this city." "No, Castor," Demeter said. "The Company will need your presence and inspiration now more than ever. You are to link with Tyrannus and provide leadership for both the Fulminata and the Guard."
"Captain Demeter," Castor said, coming up short.
Demeter stopped with him.
"We cannot lose you," the chaplain said. "The Company needs your leadership. The Guard needs it. Any one of us would die at your side beneath the banner of the Fulminata. Its sacred folds cannot be allowed to fall into the hands of Xenos savages."
"None of us will leave this city if a stand is not made," Demeter said. "There is no time for debate, Castor. You will go now and link with Lieutenant Tyrannus. That is an order."
Castor bowed his head briefly, clearly swallowing a bitter protest.
"Until we meet again, Brother Captain," he said, making the double gauntlet salute of the Primaris.
"Courage and honor," Demeter replied.
Polixis. The Hellblasters opened fire. Four beams of blue brilliance lit up the darkness, the sunburst flare of plasma weaponry further enhanced by the reflective properties of the dust cloud. The leading orcs were reduced to swirls of ash and burning embers, the stench of atomized innards immediately filling the clogged air. The aliens' roars redoubled as those behind realized they finally found opposition in the ruined city. The crack of plasma was answered by the crude hammer of slug weapons as the greenskins returned fire, an inaccurate hail of hard rounds filling the air and ploughing the rubble around Polixis. He ignored the fusillade and ran to the side of Victus and Ennio.
"I've had worse,"
the latter said, as Victus helped pull him to his feet. His power armor was battered and scarred, but his left arm, from the vambrace down, had taken the worst of the impact. It had been crushed while shielding his head from the workhouse's collapse. Polixis didn't need to run a diagnostic scan to know it would require complete restructuring, perhaps amputation.
"See to Trejo, brother apothecary," Victor said, unclamping his bolt pistol with his right hand.
Behind him, Polixis saw that Otho and Marius had finally dug down to the last of their trapped battle brothers.
"Both legs," Trejo said, his tone not quite masking the pain in his voice.
He was seated, and blood was oozing from half a dozen ruptures in his thigh and shin plates. Polixis knelt swiftly and stabbed an adrenaline shot into his tacit port.
"That'll keep you going for now," he said, motioning to Otho and Marius. "You'll have to lift him clear." "We must withdraw, brother apothecary," Domitian said.
The Hellblasters covering the rest of the squad had set their incinerators to rapid fire, dangerously close to the overcharge setting that would unleash searing destruction at the risk of fatal malfunctions to the volatile plasma cores. Streak after streak of blue light whipped away the oncoming greenskins, their scrap armor, furs, and hides as impotent a protection as their thick skin and bones. There were too many, however, to hold back for more than a few moments. The brilliant bolts unleashed by Gratian, Junarius, Lawrence, and Luco were also serving to draw more orcs towards them, threatening to overwhelm their flanks, or, worse, cut them off entirely. Otho and Marius had Trejo lifted between them, signalling their readiness with blink-click confirmations. Polixis stood by them as they worked their way down from the mound of excavated rubble to more stable ground.
"Formation ardent,"
Domitian said, ordering a defensive withdrawal focused around protecting Trejo. The rest of the Hellblasters closed smoothly around their wounded comrade, paying no heed to the hard rounds whipping the dust-choked air and cracking from their power armor. Ennio joined Polixis, his incinerator hefted in his remaining good arm. Domitian and Victus took up the rear, laying down rapid, accurate bursts of fire from their assault plasma incinerators. The squad didn't get far before it became apparent that it was too late to disengage. The greenskins coming from the rock hadn't arrived in a single group as expected, but moved northwards like a bloodthirsty tide. While Squad Domitian had stemmed it for 100 yards just east of the Gorgon, the rest of it had flowed on around them. Now, as they tried to pull away, it threatened to come crashing in from either side. Greenskins were closing from almost every direction, and the air itself vibrated with their battle frenzy. Polixis fired to his right as he kept pace with the rest of the squad, moving at an ungainly half-run while they ensured Trejo was shielded at the center of their small phalanx.
"Squad Domitian, we are inbound!"
crackled the voice of Sergeant Clastis. The intercessors were withdrawing from the riverbank, and Clastis's route to the east would carry them close to the Hellblasters as they tried to force their way northwards. A glance at the tactical display told Polixis they'd be too late. It would take at least 10 minutes to link up, minutes they no longer had. The first green skin broke through to them. It threw itself at Brother Luco with a howl, a huge cleaver slamming into the Hellblaster's right pauldron, and lodging there, splitting the dust-cake chapter crest. Luco fired with barely a yard between him and the greenskin. The plasma bolt turned the orc to ash and fused the whole right side of the Primaris armor's ceramite. Luco tugged the cleaver free in time to fling it deftly into the chest of the second beast to run at him.
By then, a third was grappling with Junarius. The squad was overrun. Polixis slipped his gladius from its black plastic sheath and turned it, point downwards, continuing to fire with his bolt pistol into the onrushing aliens. One directly ahead of him collapsed with its throat torn out by an explosive round. Another had its thick skull blown apart in a shower of grey matter. The pistol's